Hey guys, ECRG here, back with another episode. Today we're here with a very, very special guest, actually a good friend of mine from the industry, and he goes by Eric. Eric, how you doing today, man?
Doing all right. How you doing today?
Thank you so much. I'm doing well, first of all. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on today. I think you are the fourth person I've interviewed on the channel so far, and we're going to go ahead and get into it. Eric is actually a project manager assistant, so he kind of is like the right-hand person of a project manager, but I'm going to let Eric go ahead and introduce himself a little bit, kind of tell us a little bit about his background, where he went to school, things of that nature, how he got into clinical research, and then we're going to kind of go a little bit further in depth from there. So Eric, I'm going to give you the floor right now. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. How are you doing today? My name is Eric. I went to school in Richmond, Virginia, VCU, big basketball school. My background was in biology, and I did a year of preclinical phase research. I had the intentions of going to pharmacy school, but then, you know, right before actually accepting an offer to a school, had a change of heart and found out about the CRO industry. Had no idea about it, you know, prior to a phone call with one of my family friends. And super surprised about, you know, what it held and what it's become to me. And it's been a really great experience so far.
Excellent. So how long have you been in the industry so far?
Just about a year and 4 months now.
A year and 4 months. Okay. So that's a pretty good amount of experience in the industry so far. Now, just to go back a little bit, what did you say your major was in college?
Biology with a minor in chemistry.
All right, biology and chemistry. Now, I was a psychology major, but from your perspective, do you think having that science major kind of helped you get your foot in the door in the industry, or do you think it doesn't matter at all?
Yeah, I would absolutely say that it does give you an upper edge over other candidates. You know, it gives you that that comfort factor with, you know, the terminology that's thrown around very commonly in studies. I think there is definitely an extra learning curve for someone who, you know, per se was a mass comm major, yeah, trying to get into this industry. If they don't have that background, it's definitely going to add to the workload of, you know, training and getting comfortable, getting moving with all the materials.
Right. So you majored in bio and chemistry, change of heart at the last second from pharmacy school. And so like, how did you find that first job to get into the industry?
Yeah. Kind of briefly touched on it in my intro, got a little ahead of myself, but I have a family friend who, works up in Boston, actually for my current company. She works in proposals and, you know, I had a talk with her and I said, I'm not really sure what I want to do. I knew she worked in the pharmaceutical industry, but I didn't know it was considered the CRO, you know, right, contract research organization.
Right.
Had no idea what that meant. So she gave me a quick, you know, synopsis of it. And I said, that's really interesting. And she said, well, you know, if you want, I'll put in a referral for you. And I said, sure. So got an interview and, you know, here I am.
Wow. That's amazing. So basically you had a good connection able to like refer you to get into the field.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people who always emailing me eliteclinicalgroup@gmail.com for anyone out there who has any questions, always emailing me about how to get into the industry and always tell them, you know, you got to kind of utilize all your resources, connections, applying. One of my favorite websites is indeed.com for applying. You got to kind of utilize everything, including your resources, to try and get your foot in the door in the industry. So were you like applying to a bunch of places, or was this like the only thing you had to do to kind of get into the industry?
Well, that's actually funny you ask. Yeah. In the meantime, I was actually applying to Quintiles. I was applying to, PPD, you know, Covance, all these different companies, and I was actually applying as a CRA one,
right,
because
right.
The contact I had worked in a completely different realm of the CRO industry in proposals.
Uh-huh.
So she had no idea, you know, what a assistant project manager does. So she told me, hey, you might like the clinical side. You might like working in project management. She talked about startups. So I was applying to all these positions that I really, wasn't qualified for as an entry level applicant.
Right.
So yeah, it was just, that's pretty much what I was doing. I don't think I would have had a shot if they gave me an interview, because I was applying for something that had more expected knowledge than I possessed at the time.
Right. And that's
Yeah.
interesting you say that, because a lot of people, email me and are just like, I want to be a CRA. I want to be a CRA. How can I be a CRA right now?
Yeah.
Make it happen right now. But a lot of people don't realize that CRA and project manager or like these other roles, they're not entry level roles at all. And they actually do require you to have some background knowledge, GCP,
Definitely.
just how clinical trials works in general before you can actually like take them on. So, all right, cool. So, I mean, me and you, we actually had started out in the same way, similarly.
It's my cat. What's up, Puff?
What's up, Puff?
Continue. Sorry
Welcome to
about
the
that.
podcast, Puff.
Yeah, he wants to be on it, apparently.
So yeah, you did that. Now, did you have any other like research experience in undergrad or anything? Like any like bench research, lab research, or anything like that?
Yeah, so I had about a year and some change, maybe a year and 2 months of preclinical phase research is what I call it, before it's actually implemented in human trial. Was working on a cancer-based genetic study, and there was a protein complex we were looking to trigger within these different phenotypes of Drosophila that we were creating constructs of. And it was a really, really interesting study. It definitely helped me with my GLP. It gave me a lot of terminology and a lot of understanding of what goes on before a drug is developed,
Hold on, what's
put in the.
GLP? Is that good lab practices?
Yeah,
Oh, okay.
exactly.
All right.
And we're doing anything from cloning, electrophoresis, sequencing, just all of that. I can go on for 10 minutes
Right.
about
So,
it.
do you feel like that kind of helped you get your foot in the door in clinical research? Or do you feel like that they didn't really care about that?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that during my interview process, they definitely, stuck to that topic for quite a bit. They asked me a lot of questions about it, and I felt like it was, it definitely gave me an upper edge on my competition. As far as the experience in general, it gave me, better terminology. It gave me like a sense of what this product is before it makes it out into the actual clinical study. And I think that really helped because, if I didn't have that and all I had was my pharmacy background, I wouldn't have no idea of what, before the actual clinical phase 1 through 4, what
Right.
happens. So that really gave me that insight. And I kind of played it on me saying, I understand how important all that is, all that work that goes into it.
Right.
And I understand how important it is in those phases 1 to 4. So I kind of just like built upon it and said, it gives me a backbone, a foundation to, continue pushing forward with. So.
Right. All right, cool. So I think that's a little bit different than, because that is clinical research experience. I mean, it's technically like phase zero, as they call it. So that's definitely a lot different than like, I did like horticulture research on like proteins,
Ah,
back in
right.
undergrad. So there's definitely a distinction there and a difference there. I feel like what you were doing was definitely more along the lines of clinical research. So who knows? Maybe they even consider that like experience. But as I'm sure as you know, in this field, they take that experience very, very like seriously, and they really want people with like clinical research experience, trying to get in. So.
Yeah. And let me say this. We have people in this industry from all walks of life. We have project managers that came from, tech or maybe working for a restaurant industry and stuff. I've heard all these different backgrounds.
Right.
And I think nowadays it's more important because they have the ability, because there's such a high demand, they have the ability to be more selective and be more tedious with who they choose, and they can say, hey, you have to have this background now, because that's just, as things grow, they become more selective, you know?
Right.
Supply and demand, that's all it is. So I definitely agree with you on that.
Right. And also, like, as this, you know, if the sponsor decides they want people with experience, then that's who the CROs have to hire, because the sponsor has to sign off on everybody working on a study.
Yeah.
So you're in the industry now. You know, what would you say it was like working in the industry for like the first few months? You know, was that a big adjustment coming right out of college?
Yeah, it definitely was. I wasn't straight out of college. I actually worked in a few different avenues of pharmacy before that. But my first few months in the CRO industry there was a big learning curve. You know, definitely a lot of time management skills and, you know, just getting used to having different tasks every day rather mm-hmm. than having the same tasks every day.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing. So definitely learned to implement the use of my calendar a lot more. You know, and as far as the abbreviations and the acronyms that are used so commonly, that really threw me a curveball. I had to get used to that.
Yeah.
I recommend everyone printing out a cheat sheet of clinical trial terms.
Right.
Really helped me.
I actually plan on making a video about a few of those, the big
ones.
Oh,
that'd be great.
Yeah, just running through them.
Yeah.
Yeah, were you saying something?
Oh, yeah, that's really it. It wasn't too difficult, but, you know, there's definitely a lot of different things that they expect you to know, you know, whether that's making pivot tables in Excel or taking minutes, well-detailed minutes, which, you know, we both have had our discussions about what we
exactly.
take in minutes.
Exactly.
I don't know if this is a PG podcast. But
it's not. PG-13. Don't go like rated R.
Well, that shit sucks.
Yeah.
Everyone. Minutes are the worst. But moving forward. Wasn't the worst, but, you know, there's definitely a learning curve.
For sure. So you kind of detailed it a little bit. You know, your first role was a project manager assistant type role with minutes. What other tasks were you doing? I kind of described it as kind of like a jack of all trades type of position. Pretty much anything
Absolutely.
They ask you to do, you kind of are the person, the go-to person to go ahead and get that done.
So yeah.
In your words, like what would you say about that?
Yeah. That's very accurate. I was managing anything from the investigator payment system, which mm-hmm. was actually a third party system. So that took some time getting used to. And it's, you know, it's not always the most stable system. It has a lot of, you know, issues that pop up just because it's not perfectly integrated with, you know, Rave and whatnot, metadata Rave. I've managed form consent forms, the input of the data in CTMS, had to go and do some verification of imaging in metadata Rave,
mm-hmm.
Managing, you know, databases for site staff, internal staff, vendor staff, creating newsletters and mass communications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the list goes on. It really, like you said, is a jack of all trades kind of deal. And,
right.
You're the right-hand man to the project manager.
Right. You know,
or women.
Yeah. A lot of it is, a lot of them are women. I think more are, actually.
Yeah. That's why I had to throw that in there.
Yeah.
we all owe it to our mothers.
For sure. It's definitely a female-dominated industry. For sure.
Yep.
So what do you think about, I guess was that a good like entry level role? Would you recommend other people to kind of get their foot in the door that way, or maybe some other roles you can think of?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was really great, and it gives you a good foundation to build off of. There's many different avenues you can take within the ladder, whether that's a linear or a vertical move. You know, it's up to you. I also think it'd be cool. Since the TMF, the trial master file, which I also didn't mention, was what took up most of my time.
Right.
That's a huge deliverable, very important part of the clinical trial. And if you can get into maybe a TMF operations position, I think that would give you a really good basis to build a case to move up with. I also think maybe like an operations, internal operations with however you guys manage your actual trials. If you have like a group like that, that'd be really great to get into. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of different avenues. Those are probably the other two I'd recommend.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one about the TMF. That one doesn't get talked about enough because, I mean, I'm sure as you know, every study has issues with the TMF. The
Oh yeah.
TMF is a big deal. So, yeah, I definitely recommend the TMF part of it. So, as far as your role, you've been in it for like a year and a half now. What is kind of like the career trajectory for that role? Like, where can people move from there? Because that is on the project management side, but can people go clinical or, what can people do from that?
Yeah. I mean, it's really a very versatile position. So you can keep moving up the ladder. You can go vertically, you can go to project manager, and you can go into project director. And then, if you want to even climb further, you can get up into an executive customer relations position. Or you can be an executive director. There's so many opportunities. People have moved into VP of strategic relations or solutions and whatnot. It's just that's the vertical way. If you want to go more linear, I guess you can go over into would it be a CMA? What do you
Yeah,
think would be the next step?
like in-house CRA, but I mean, that was technically laterally, but it depends.
Okay.
But yeah,
Well, that's what I meant. Not linear. I meant lateral. A lateral
laterally.
move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was technically laterally. But that's a good route to go too.
Yeah. So when I say lateral, I don't mean you're doing the same exact skill. You're not having the same tasks thrown at you, but it's kind of the same level of, I don't want to throw anyone off by saying this, respect
Yeah.
within the company.
Yeah.
Because it is a hierarchy. So yeah, I think as far as that, and then also you can go into maybe a TMF manager position. Yeah, that's as far as I know, to be honest. There's a lot of different realms, but I haven't explored those too much, so.
Okay. Can people become CRAs from that role too?
Yeah, well, it's funny you asked that because I'm actually in transition right now. I was offered a position to become a CRA one, and it's definitely possible, guys. So, keep your head up and keep chugging away.
So did you know before you got into clinical research that you wanted to be a CRA?
I had heard about it, but I wasn't sure if it was my thing, due to the travel, and I didn't really know if it was like one of those positions that it kind of like made it seem like you were a medical professional, but it was just kind of like glorified. But I did my due diligence and I found out it's a really great position. It's well respected, it's well benefited, and
Yes.
I'm really happy to be in this position. So
Congrats on that, man. I know you've been working hard for that. And
I appreciate it.
I think you'll do really well at that, and I think you'll enjoy it. It's
Sure
definitely
hope
a
so.
blast. It's definitely a blast. I can tell you that.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm just trying to be like you.
Respect. So how long does it take the average person to become a CRA in your eyes?
Well, I think at least a couple of years. So I was definitely blessed
Yeah.
to
Timing
have
is huge. Timing is
it.
everything.
It really is. It really is, and it's all about your stars aligning. And I think persistence is really key. I think it's easy for people to, become disheartened when they're told, there's nothing available right now. And we definitely live in a time of instant gratification
Yeah.
being what we feed off of. And I think people need to realize it's not always going to work out right away. You got to keep pushing, and just keep putting your ideas and your and emphasizing on how much you care about this position, how much you want to grow and improve yourself in the right people's ears. Just eventually someone will hear it and they'll say, hey, it'll click, and they'll be able to make a move for you. It just takes a lot of time.
Right. So, I mean, I know as early as like a few years ago, people were getting into the CRA role with like 6 months, definitely even a year or less of experience.
Oh, wow.
But it has since changed because the sponsor wants more experienced people. So it has kind of trickled down through the CRO.
Right.
But yeah, like a year and a half in the industry, becoming a CRA, that's excellent, man. That's almost unheard of at this point.
Yeah, it's really great. My sponsor decided that they were willing to take on a CRA one. I spoke with our VP, I spoke with my director, and I really let them know that I really wanted to move into this position and how much I cared about it. And I built a case for myself.
Yes.
I made sure I had clinically ended tasks that I was asking for on top of my regular duties and responsibilities. And so just kind of, pushing on them, and they said, "Hey, we're going to try to pitch you to the sponsor." And it worked out. So, there's always a possibility.
Right. And you really gotta kind of look out for yourself in a lot of these situations and make sure you have your own kind of self-interest at heart, your own best interest at heart.
Absolutely.
So congratulations on that, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I'm pumped for you. So that's happening for you in the next few months. Do you feel ready? Do you feel like you're ready to kind of jump into that role? Do you feel like you've kind of mastered and done all you could do in the previous project manager assistant role?
I always think there's more to be learned. There's always room for improvement. But I think I'm pretty well off. Obviously, there's a lot that I don't know specifically, in depth as far as outside of the shell. Like I've been on an IMV shadowing. I kind of saw the outer, the shell of it, everything that was already prepared, it was handed over, it was signed off on. But I didn't see everything that went into that. I didn't see what went into writing the report, and all the
That's a big deal.
preparation. Yeah, so I think as far as what I know, on the project management side, I can use that and apply it to becoming a CRA, but there is a lot more that I plan on finding out in the training, in the next 3 months.
So do you know a little bit about the training program? Like what how are they training you? Because you are coming from project management and having made a similar transition myself, there is a huge difference between the project management side and the clinical side. And I think even you said it, there's a big learning curve. There's gonna be a big learning curve. But
Right.
I know they're gonna train you up well. They're not gonna send you out there blind just to kind of like fuddle
Let's
around
hope
and do your thing.
not.
But do you know what they're going to be teaching you in the training program? 'Cause people ask these questions all the time.
Right. Not 100% sure, I'll be honest, but I have heard there's a lot of simulation. There's a lot of, if this happens, if this goes wrong, what do you do? If the PI is not there, what do you do? If they can't find their materials or their binders, what do you do? Just a lot of, what ifs. I also heard there's a lot of, it's almost like a manners course. It teaches you how to be professional and how to deal with, site staff and, doctors and surgeons and, just high up there people, up in the hierarchy of the hospital, how to deal with them because you don't want to upset them. You want to encourage them to enroll and try their best to make sure their subjects that, meet the inclusion exclude in the inclusion criteria are actually getting enrolled, and the ones that, don't, they're being weeded through, So.
Well, that'll be good. How long does that last, the training period?
It's about 3 months, and I believe in the second month, you start doing co-monitoring visits.
Okay. Well, that'll be good. We'll have to have you back on here to talk about your experience with that, because I'm sure a
Love
lot
to
of
be.
people would be interested. I've done a little bit during my training period, but it's always good to hear different perspectives too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely fill you all in when all is said and done.
When all is said and done, man.
Yep.
So project manager assistant to CRA. What I know it's kind of early in the process, but have your sights set on something, after CRA, or you're just kind of focused on that right now, or have you given much thought even to it? Because I know this is all fairly recent.
Yeah, I've always had a hankering for wanting to become a hospital administrator. I
Really?
always thought that was a really cool position. I thought you were really involved in just having that oversight. But as I dig deeper into this CRA position, I'm starting to learn about the ladder and I guess it would be considered like a clinical team lead.
Yeah.
That might be cool. And later on in life, when you have a family going and more responsibilities, it might be more difficult to continue the CRA route if you're in a high demand study with a lot of traveling.
Right.
And this trial lead position would give you the opportunity to oversee the CRAs that report to you. And it's more of a remote work from home kind of deal, less travel. I
Yes.
think it's like 20% travel. You go to some investigator meetings, you go to other internal meetings and whatnot, but it's not so much you're going on site unless there's like you need to fill in or something, right?
Exactly,
Does that sound
exactly.
about right?
Yeah, that's about right.
So I think that'd be really cool to explore through, and I just think the possibilities are really endless, man. You never know, like something might open and they'll say, hey, this person's really good at doing this. Let's give them a shot. It doesn't always have to be you keep going straight up. You can go, you can go 45 degrees if you want
Right.
in the other direction and cut
Right.
through some stuff. So,
Right. That's pretty
yeah.
cool. Yeah. I like the CTL role. It's a good role. That's about as much as I could say there. So yeah, people ask about the travel a lot, and of course, like if you can have family while being a CRA and stuff. So how much travel did they advertise to you?
They said it could be up to 65% of the time. However, I'm on a stroke study and the inclusion exclusion criteria is very, very intense. So we only enroll, maybe a patient or two every week, maybe every 2 weeks.
Oh, on the whole
So,
study.
right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's very, very tedious. They have these standards of scores that they want the patient to achieve, and if not, they'll exclude them and consider them a screen fail. And there's a lot that goes into it. So this study is more so 20 to 30% travel, and then 70 to 80% regulatory and oversight, working from home, maybe even doing some ad hoc visits. Or doing visits for another study. They might borrow you and put you on another study to, run some visits. So it all really depends.
Right. Yeah, I know when they say 65%, that's a real 65%. They're not saying that and actually going to give you like 30% or
Oh, wow.
25%. So, yeah, that's for real. And a lot of people think that they're just joking when they say stuff like that. But it couldn't be further
But
from
they're
the
not.
truth. Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. So, yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, I'm told 65%, and I'd say it's probably more right now, but I mean it goes through ups and downs.
Yeah.
I'm probably more like 75, 80% right now.
Wow. Well, people always say it's not all about the money, but it sure does help.
Yes.
You're probably getting some nice incentives for that extra travel, aren't
It
you?
sure does help. Yeah. Yeah, I know, 'cause I'm in the sponsor level now. I know at the CRO level they do offer a lot of bonuses and stuff. So if you like complete a certain number of visits in a month, you get like a nice bonus.
Right.
One time I even was told like if you get all your reports in on time, you'll get a bonus. So basically if you like do your job, you'll get a bonus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Someone told me that one time. I thought that was kind of crazy.
Yeah, definitely. You'd think that'd be the standard, but
Exactly.
hey.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. CRA is just a crazy life. It's a crazy lifestyle. It's a good lifestyle. I definitely see the appeal of it, and I definitely see why people like it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to jumping in.
You can do a lot of cool things with it. A lot of cool things, especially like I was talking to one of my colleagues, and he was saying every time he would go out to a place with mountains, he would like kind of go there a day early and then You'll go skiing and snowboarding the whole day. So,
Wow.
yeah, you can do some really cool stuff with it.
That's excellent. Yeah, I have heard that.
Yeah. So I'm excited for you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Just wanted to wrap up here. Did you have, any like, I guess, words of encouragement for any people that are listening out there who are trying to get their foot in the door in clinical research? Any last words to them, or any tips you may be able to help? Any tips you may be able to offer?
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate the word persistence, guys. It's very important. You gotta keep pushing and believing in yourself, and you really gotta build a case. You have to, when you have that interview, if you're lucky enough to, or even if it's being applied to your resume, you gotta build a case for yourself and show that you can be placed into this position, even though you may not have all of the necessary background. You got to show them that you can, and you got to sell yourself as a product essentially to your interviewers. And I mean, that's pretty much what I did. I also asked them at the end, hey, is there any reason why you think I wouldn't be able to, succeed in this position? It's kind of like a closer statement. And, my last interviewer said, well, I think this kind of concerns me. And then that gave me the opportunity to touch on that. And cover my tracks and say, hey, well, you think this? Well, I have this experience and I would, be able to do this and provide this. So I just think it's a matter of just being confident in yourself, being patient, and looking out for yourself, like you said, because if companies have obligations to you as much as you do to them, and if they're not giving you the opportunity to grow or get your foot in the door, then there's always another one to try. So don't hang around too long, but be patient at the same time. There's a happy medium somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great points all around there. That's one of the best things about this industry, I feel like, is there's just so much opportunity and so many companies you can work for. I don't know, I just really like having that ability. So where if something happens, you need to quit and work for someone else, you have that ability to do that. So you've got a lot of
Oh,
leverage
yeah.
with that.
Absolutely.
I really like that.
It's a good deal.
Thanks so much again, Eric, for agreeing to come on the podcast and the show here. I definitely would like to give people the opportunity to email you, I guess, if they have any questions, or they can just email me at eliteclinicalgroup@gmail.com. And I can forward them on to Eric if anyone has any specific questions. Yeah,
Yeah, let's do it that way.
we'll just
Yeah.
do that. Or you can comment down below if you're listening on YouTube. Any questions, I can forward those on to Eric and see what he says. So,
Yes, sir.
thanks once again, Eric.
Yeah, Mr. ECRG, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.